This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday afternoon, September 10th, 2019. Ahead on today's show, ArtLinks 2019 is coming to Northwest Arkansas. The annual conference about the intersection of art, culture, and economy will be held at the Graduate Hotel in downtown Fayetteville next month. We reach members of the Arkansas Arts Council staff, the sponsoring organization, to get an idea of what will take place. This afternoon on Here and Now on 91.3, Tim Brown left a career as a soccer player in New Zealand to get a business degree. 2 years later, he co-founded Allbirds, the eco-conscious shoe company that claims its shoes are the most comfortable you'll ever wear. Now Allbirds is valued at more than $1 billion. That and more on Here and Now, beginning right after Ozarks at Large at 1 o'clock. Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale will host an artist talk tonight with Kelly Lair. Her work is in the ACO Gallery through the 24th of this month. Her talk tonight is scheduled to begin at 6. A Fayetteville resident with a BS in International Economics, she's also the curator for the Gallery at Midtown in Bentonville. And it is that time of year again for KUAF's fall fundraiser. During the entire month of September, all pledges we receive will count toward our fall goal. The on-air portion of the fundraiser begins the last week of this month, but making your gift early helps us start with as much money raised as possible. Support the international, national, and local programming that makes this public radio station yours. Make your gift online at supportkuaf.com, and thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this year, Mercy Northwest Arkansas released the results of a survey that studied local residents' health concerns. The study found mental health ranks second among respondents as their biggest health concern. An event in Springdale this weekend aims to address that worry by connecting residents with mental health services. Mindfest Northwest Arkansas returns Saturday with interactive vendor booths, art installations, food trucks, and live music. Last week, co-founder Nicole Gutierrez came to Studio 123 to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about the festival, which she says is a Mind Coalition licensed event.
The Mind Coalition is a group, a nonprofit out of the Little Rock area. And so they started Mindfest down there in 2017. So this year they're doing it again. It'll be their third year. It's our second year up here in Northwest Arkansas. But Richard, the co-founder with me and co-chair member, we went down there and kind of liked what they were doing, and then we wanted to do it up here, bring it up here. So they allowed us to like use their marketing material, things like that. So
what can you tell me about that organization down there? It's a nonprofit.
Yeah, so it's a nonprofit group that was founded, I believe, in 2017. And they're focused on, Mind Coalition stands for Mental Illness and Neurodevelopmental Disorders.
Okay.
So it's a nonprofit that's focused on breaking down the stigma of mental health, and they have their three-tiered mission that focuses on increasing awareness for mental health resources in Arkansas, educating the community through an interactive and open discussion about mental health, as well as promoting integration among mental health professionals in community. So one of their big events that they do is Mindfest. They do some other little things, but and up here all we do is the Mindfest
event.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned neurodevelopment disorders.
Mm-hmm.
What's an example of that?
I would say a neurodevelopmental disorder, maybe autism. And so, you know, one of the things that we do at this particular event is we have, you know, a kids area, but we have sensory items for them to play with. And so a lot of kids with autism find those things soothing or comforting, and you know, it's beneficial to them. So we have those things there along with, you know, a bounce house, typical festival.
Family-friendly
event, fun things.
The event itself, it seems like the focus are these vendors.
Yes.
About how many are you expecting?
So this year we have close to 30, mm-hmm. And then there are still some people reaching out. And the majority of them are nonprofit groups. So, you know, the goal here is just to get as many vendors as we can. So if you're a nonprofit, it's free. We don't charge booth fees for that. So a lot of them are nonprofit groups that are going to be there. There's others like, you know, my particular place of employment, we're not nonprofit. So, but, and we're also a sponsor there, but we have to raise money to help put on the events.
Sure.
So, but yeah, there's close to 30 this year, I would say.
Now, are most of the vendors you mentioned, they're nonprofit, are they specific to mental health related
yes.
fields?
Yes. Anyone that is involved as a vendor has to have some, you know, their booth. We ask that everyone have an interactive booth and it not just be, you know, brochures that you walk up and get, which those are nice and those are things we want to provide to the community. But we also, you know, last year we had a group there that had horses. There, it was a mm-hmm. equine therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's interactive. You know, they brought their horses. The kids, you know, would come up and pet them. We had groups that they did, like, light therapy. So they had, like, a light therapy session and things like that. So we asked that it be interactive and that you do something, even if that's, like, you know, a door prize or something like that, just something that's fun and people can learn about new therapeutic techniques, things like that.
I think so often when we think of mental health and say getting treatment, we may think of going to see a psychologist or psychiatrist, and sometimes there's barriers to entry with insurance or the payment and that sort of thing. And it sounds like there are several maybe affordable options if there are nonprofits there. Are people surprised to find that there are these nonprofits that are reaching out to mental health areas?
I would say, I mean, a lot of the nonprofit groups, you know, they're not necessarily, okay, for instance, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's around suicide, mm-hmm. obviously. They don't provide services. They provide help and education and support groups and things like that. There are going to be groups, there are some counseling groups that are going to be there that, you know, they're not nonprofit, but they do take, a lot of them do take Medicaid, some of them do take Medicaid, and then you're going to come across some that, you know, don't have, you know, there's not, it's going to be difficult. But we're trying to bring all of those groups together to provide the most options for people. You know, there is a group there this year. They are providing pro bono services to people with mental health illnesses. And it's really about the people that are involved with helping put this together. I really feel like we really want to just help people and make sure that they get the resources that they need. And if last year, for example, people would come up and ask, you know, do you have someone here for this? And, you know, no, sorry, we don't have a vendor for that, but I can get you in touch with someone. And so even if it's, you know, just come see what's there. If there's something there that you can't, that you're not finding for that you're needing, we will point you in the right direction.
So it sounds like it's about making connections and kind of mm-hmm. getting someone on the path to finding.
Yeah. And it's really about breaking the stigma around, mental illnesses. A lot of people don't want to talk about it, don't like to talk about it. They don't like to, they don't want to, people to look down on them. And it's really about having an open conversation about it and having it out there in the open, and there's nothing wrong with it. And that's really what it's about.
It's obviously a challenge to break that stigma because it's mm-hmm. a conversation that's been going on for a long time. So how, in this instance, do you get someone to maybe overcome some of those fears that they may have about being looked down on or something like that, to come to something like this just to talk to someone?
Well, I mean, I think that's why, you know, the event is, it's, that's why you try to make it a fun atmosphere. Just come see what it's about. And
because there's more than just vendors.
There's more than just vendors.
There's music.
So we're going to have live music there. The Hospitones are going to be there. And there's an affiliation with Washington Regional there.
Uh-huh.
But we're going to have three therapeutic sessions, a little different than what we did last year. So starting from 10:30 to 11:30, we're having a yoga session provided by Vitality Yoga. So it'll be, you know, some meditation, some actual yoga, mats will be provided. And then also talking about, with that, it'll include information on trauma-informed yoga therapy. So it's plugging that in there as well, informing people about that. And it's all free to the public. So, we have an art therapy session. So it's about mindfulness and knowing your worth And that's what that's going to be about. And that's going to be from 11:30 to 12:30. And that's being provided by MyT by Design. And then from 12 to 12:45, we have a music therapy session. It'll be music therapy of Northwest Arkansas, and they'll have, you know, group instruments, maybe possibly a songwriting activity. So it's meant to be interactive and fun, and to, you know, it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. Like, these are things that are meant to open people up to having those conversations.
Is there anything that you learned from last year's event that you can take into this year's event?
You know, it takes a lot of people to put these things on. You know, last year it was just Richard and myself, Richard Lally, and it was difficult just us doing it. You know, unfortunately, we've used our professional connections within the medical community to bring on some other people this year to help plan it. And I'm hoping next year that we can, you know, add even more people to help plan it and it be an even bigger event.
Anything else we should know?
No, just come out, have a good time, come see what it's about, and help start the conversation.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Nicole Gutierrez, co-founder of MindFest Northwest Arkansas. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda last week. The event is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Saturday at Shiloh Square in Springdale. Admission to the all-ages event is free. More information is available by searching for MindFest NWA on Facebook. You can also send an email to mindcoalitionnwa@gmail.com. The University of Arkansas is tied for 72nd place in the just-released ratings for public universities from U.S. News & World Report. The Best College 2020 rankings puts the U of A 6 spots higher than last year's rankings. Other numbers, Arkansas is rated as the 71st best value among public institutions and 63rd among public schools in the Best Colleges for Veterans list. The Sam M. Walton College of Business is placed 27th among public business schools and 43rd among all business colleges. The other colleges tied with Arkansas, by the way, for 72nd place among public institutions, LSU and Alabama. Princeton this year ranked best among all colleges in the new rankings. UCLA holds the top spot for public universities. And John Brown University ranked 11th in regional universities in the southern United States. More people are flying out of the Fort Smith Regional Airport in 2019. Talk Business and Politics reports enplanements, the industry term for outbound flyers, up more than 4.5% for the first 8 months of 2019 compared to the same time frame last year. It is the third consecutive year for growth at the airport. So far this year, almost 62,000 people have flown out of the Fort Smith Airport. The total number of flyers out of the airport for all of last year, just over 90,000. And still to come on today's show, the University of Arkansas's 5-member canine police unit includes a community service dog for the first time.
You see a canine and their handler out, it's business. You know, you don't want to approach that dog or that handler, but she is going to be our community outreach canine.
That story in about 20 minutes on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The U.S. 71B signs in Fayetteville could start disappearing before the end of the year. The city has been in discussions with the Arkansas Department of Transportation to take over the state-run highway. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us more about the proposed change in ownership.
If the Fayetteville City Council passes a transportation committee resolution next week, City Engineer Chris Brown says the 6.5 miles of Highway 71B, known as College and School Avenues, will no longer belong to the Arkansas Department of Transportation.
They're much more focused on moving traffic, which is their mission, of course, of being the highway department.
So Brown says, in order to focus on other aspects of the road, the stretch of 71B between the Fulbright Expressway near the Northwest Arkansas Mall and the Fulbright Expressway near Drake Field has to change hands.
What we always try to do when we do these is make sure we get a facility that's in good shape, that's like new condition. So the highway department did an analysis of 71B, and they said, well, we've got about $1.5 million worth of work that we think would be necessary to get that to like new condition.
Instead of making all those repairs, Brown says the highway department is making the funds available to the city, which will then have the discretion to use the money as it sees fit, as long as the projects meet federal criteria.
You know, I always joke that, you know, people say, well, how long does it take for the highway department to let go of the, you know, to go through the process. And I said, well, as soon as you say that you're ready to go, it takes them about 5 minutes to get the paperwork together, because they're always very ready to get rid of lane miles to reduce the number of lane miles they have.
The highway department ends up with less miles to maintain. And the city, Brown says, can get a lot more done without having to ask the department for permits to install new signals, sidewalks, striping, or anything else it wants to do.
For example, putting in a signal, they have a long list of warrants that they call them that you have to analyze, and you have to have enough traffic. The problem that we run into is, you know, there are many locations out there where we think a signal would be beneficial, but not many people use that particular side street because you can't turn left safely. But the highway department says, well, there's not enough traffic there. Well, the reason there's not enough traffic is because you don't have the signal in place.
By taking ownership of 71B, the city will be in charge of all those decisions. Brown says that's crucial to making many of the recommendations found in Fayetteville's 71B corridor plan a reality.
Some of the things that our citizens have asked for that we think are at least worth a try out there will just be much easier once we have the full control of the roadway.
Which Danny Stracely, the public information officer for the Arkansas Department of Transportation, says they're more than willing to do.
We are always looking for opportunities to unload mileage from the highway system because we have to maintain so much. We have the 12th largest highway system in the country. We have more than 16,400 miles of state highways in Arkansas. That includes state highways, U.S. highways, and interstates.
Stracely says the highway department is also unloading portions of 71B to the cities of Rogers and Bentonville as part of an agreement to build a specific type of interchange on I-49 that will cost an additional $6 million.
So they each contributed $1.5 million or $3 million. So where's the other three coming from? Well, we are unloading 71B in Rogers from I-49 all the way back to 8th Street. And then in Bentonville, we're unloading 71B originally from I-49 to Rainbow Curve. But since then, Bentonville has come back and said, you know what, we'll not only take it to Rainbow Curve, but we'll take it all the way up into up to Bella Vista.
When that ownership switches hands from the highway department to Rogers, Bentonville, and Fayetteville, the cities will maintain 71B going forward. Engineer Chris Brown says in Fayetteville's case, the city is already maintaining many aspects of its portion of the highway.
All of the things outside the curb that the city has done in recent years, so the sidewalks in the downtown area, we're required to maintain those. We're required to maintain the trees. The city also maintains all the signals along the route. So we're already maintaining a lot of that. We also, at times, will do snow and ice removal. So we're already doing a lot of maintenance and operations on the street.
Once the city owns 71B, Brown says pavement management and overlays will have to be added to the to-do list.
We've estimated it from one end to the other to do a full overlay using today's dollars is about $2.5 million. We don't think that there will be really much of any overlay work that will be for at least 10 years, maybe 15. That's kind of a typical time frame that you need to overlay.
Despite the additional cost in the future, Brown says taking over 71B just makes sense. Since the construction of I-49, the highway's role in the region is very different than it once was.
You have a certain amount of commuter traffic that's going between cities, but most of the trips that we have on 71B are somebody going from the south side of Fayetteville to the north side, going to the businesses, et cetera. So it's inner city trips. So it really is a city arterial and not a regional arterial.
But because it's going to stay a main arterial roadway, Brown says there will still be certain limitations on what the city can change.
Even though it'll be a city street, the highway department is out of the picture, we still know we have a lot of traffic out there. So I think there are some citizens who, you know, want to do a road diet and reduce the number of lanes from one end to the other. And we really don't feel like that's feasible given the amount of traffic, our current traffic stream. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that there still are some things that that will not be able to happen that some people may want.
Brown says the city will also take over a portion of Highway 112 through the U of A campus from 15th Street to I-49 once the Highway Department completes its work on that road. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
As part of the agreement to take over 71B, Chris Brown says the Highway Department has also agreed to expedite widening Highway 112 near Sam's Club. That portion of the highway will continue to be owned by the Department of Transportation.
Your gift during KUAF's fundraising month of September pays for all the news, music, and entertainment programs you enjoy and rely on, plus hundreds of public service announcements, community spotlights, and more. Make your gift now to support everything you hear on KUAF at supportkuaf.com.
And this is Ozarks at Large. The first athletic venue sellout of the fall season wasn't for a football game. It was a visit to Verizon Arena in North Little Rock by Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Justice Ginsburg talked with NPR correspondent Nina Totenberg in front of more than 16,000 people. Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about the event and what it means for a sitting Supreme Court justice to attract so many people.
A lot of things going on here. There was a liberals' night out, frustrated liberals, pent-up anger and need to express happiness in their progressivism and Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the notorious RBG and an icon to those folks, and so that was happening. She is, politics aside, her early work advancing women's rights against gender discrimination, epic, and has it made a difference in a lot of people, women's lives, who may themselves be moderate to conservative, and they would identify with her. And then it's just pure celebrity. I mean, there have been movies and documentaries made about her. She's a celebrity. Somebody said to me, "What's a big?" I said, "Hey, why is more being made of this than when Scalia came to Fort Smith?" Well, Scalia was a pretty big guy, but RBG is bigger as an icon for all the reasons I just mentioned. And he said, "Whenever a Supreme Court justice would come here, it's a major story." And I said, "How many do you think Samuel Alito would draw to the Verizon Center?" I predicted 8 to 12 people would come. It's not that it's who she was and what she represented on many levels. And it was a major event that was cathartic for a lot of reasons, for a lot of people. And she got confirmed 96-3, 26-7 years ago.
Yeah.
Relatively modern times. And it's a time when, can you imagine now, an ACLU, a person who'd done ACLU work early in her career, who says, "Yes, I'm pro-choice, look at what I've ruled on the Court of Appeal, as an appeals court justice," getting 96-3 vote and getting Republican? No, that's how, she also, to me, she represented the extent to which our politics has declined to its state of dysfunction right now, precipitously just in those 26 years. So there's a bunch of stuff going on.
No, interesting. You got any more columns coming on that? Or do you think you've got it all out?
I've got it all out.
Okay.
I think.
Lastly here, Speaker Matthew Shepard sends a letter to to the membership of the House, saying that he is going to ask them to oust Representative Mickey Gates. What do you think the odds for success are? And do you think Speaker Shepard has handled this properly? He's done his legal research. He's obviously, it sounds like he's gotten some votes lined up. And then there was the strategic, "We will release this on Friday afternoon," when nobody's paying a whole lot of attention, and put it out there.
A lot in that question.
It was, wasn't
it? So,
a loaded question is
what
they call that.
I'm going to try to reconstruct it. What are the chances of expelling Gates? Good. I don't think Matthew Shepard. I've interviewed him, done a piece for your magazine, and the joke was he's just not the joke. Just the thing about him is he's just notoriously cautious, and he will not move unless he's got things lined up. And he's very, very judicious in his thinking. And when I saw that it issued this letter, two things were immediately obvious to me. He's found a law that's pretty clearly applicable, and there is. It simply says You plead no contest. You cannot serve. Well, okay, yeah. You got that. Two is, he's lined up the votes. Now, whether he has or not, I think that he has. And instantly, you had legislators, not legislators, you had Governor Hutchinson supporting him instantly. You know, I think the likelihood is strong that unless he chooses to resign in advance of expulsion, he'll be expelled. Mm-hmm. I think so. For reasons that, under this statute, would seem to be evident. And that's what I expect to happen.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. His columns can also be found at ArkansasOnline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics. They also discussed the president and Razorback football this week. You can find their conversations about those subjects at TalkBusiness.net.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. We're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio today on the phone with Julie Moncrief. She's with the River Valley Regional Food Bank. Julie, nice to talk to you.
Hi, Pete. Thanks for calling.
Of course, September is Hunger Action Month, and we've actually been hearing from a number of different groups throughout our community that really try to fight hunger within our communities. And today we're highlighting the River Valley Regional Food Bank.
This food bank was founded in Fort Smith in 1986, and today we're one of 200 across the country that each have our own geographic region to cover, and we make up the Feeding America network so that 187 different nonprofit missions can succeed. We provide the food for them, and it's a really good, wonderful way to keep everybody in the River Valley having access to nutritional food.
You guys obviously are looking for some help from our community. What are some things that we can do to help the River Valley Regional Food Bank?
Well, thank you. We really do love the community support and depend on it all year, but this month is a campaign led by Feeding America, and it is to help everyone just become a little bit more aware of hunger in our region and the role of the food bank. And we're very grateful for a lot of restaurants and businesses and civic clubs stepping up to take action during Hunger Action Month. And so we have on our website, rvrfoodbank.org, a tab called HAM, Hunger Action Month, and you can click on it and see all the restaurants and the exact dates that if you went to eat there, 10% of your bill would go directly to fighting hunger through the food bank. And so we're really hoping the whole month to make contact with more and more businesses and civic clubs and restaurants.
Wow. It sounds like y'all have made it very easy. Yeah, to just go and sign up and kind of get involved in this effort.
Yes, and I think that's neat. What we're learning and have learned is that everybody wants to help out. And the theme of this Hunger Action Month is one helping at a time. We can end hunger one helping at a time. And it's really true, and we're just grateful for the whole regional spirit here of everyone saying, yes, we would love to help, because we all know everything really begins with food. Not a lot can happen without it. And with all of us working together, we can really make a difference. And so we're thankful to everybody for stepping up and participating.
Julie Moncrief with the River Valley Regional Food Bank. September is Hunger Action Month. One more time, Julie, that website.
RVR, as in River Valley Regional, foodbank.org.
Awesome. Julie, thanks so much for letting us know about what's going on.
Thank you, Pete, very much.
Remember, if you know of something cool in your community, let me know. That's what the Community Spotlight on KUAF is all about. You can send me an email, pete@kuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Next month, the Arkansas Arts Council will bring the 2019 edition of Arts Links to downtown Fayetteville. The conference is about the creation of art and the creation of place, and carries the subtitle this year of Live, Work, Art. Topics discussed October 6th through the 8th include building creative alliances and saving rural America with arts. Among the speakers, Steve Clark from Fort Smith, discussing how the Unexpected Festival has thrived there, and Andy Vick, the executive director of the Cultural Office of the Pikes Peak Region,
delivering the keynote address. Last month, we reached Patrick Ralston, the director of the Arkansas Arts Council, and Jess Anthony, Grants Program Manager of the Council, to learn just a bit more about the conference. Ralston says the upcoming conference will be the first to be held since a merger of several different agencies that might allow for natural attractions and the arts to be more closely linked, since Arkansas Arts Council is now part of a larger umbrella unit.
Which has just recently combined to become the Department of Parks, Heritage, and Tourism, and that includes divisions, agencies such as tourism, our state parks, our Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission, and of course us, the Arkansas Arts Council. And we all work together. We're all part of the same effort to preserve both our natural heritage, and our cultural heritage, and our artistic heritage. And certainly, all of that together forms a large part of the economy in Arkansas.
Jess Anthony, who has helped organize the programming for the conference, says the idea of art and community working together will be a strong component this year. He says Alan Lord, director of the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale, will discuss a traditional Marshallese canoe building project that took place at the museum. He says it's projects like these that help expand the notion of what art is and what art can accomplish.
We wanted to look at other places around the state. In addition to that, we're looking at the sort of the Delta trailways that we're trying to develop in the east part of the state. We're looking at a project that's working in Main Street Siloam Springs, working with the sculpture department at the university. So we're trying to get a whole picture of various sort of innovative activities that are happening around Arkansas, in addition to really exciting things happening up in Fayetteville area.
Both men say it's an encouraging time for the arts in Arkansas. Funding for a variety of projects, artists, and outreach is up. And they say the conference in Northwest Arkansas will allow a peek into an art laboratory that's developing on a large scale in Northwest Arkansas. They say the Walton Family Foundation collaboration with the Mid-America Arts Alliance, called Artist 360, is a prime example.
Which is a kind of a professional development program and grants for artists in Northwest Arkansas. Of course, the Art Space program is also meant to create livable environments for artists to continue to contribute to the economy there. And those are things that's a lesson that's already been transplanted to Little Rock with ArtSpace working with the Wingate Foundation and the Arts Council down here. And there are plenty of lessons that have been learned in Northwest Arkansas that can be shared. And there, frankly, there are other lessons in places like El Dorado that can be translated to the Delta and to Northwest Arkansas.
And people are spending money on arts and culture in Arkansas, too. Jess Anthony, Grants Program Manager at the Arkansas Arts Council, says an investment by the council of $1.3 million in grants can bring a big return to many communities.
We see old arts and culture organizations like the Walton Arts Center and Trike Theater, just organizations like that, pumping back $55 million into the economy, and that's just in FY18. Their audiences wind up spending as much as $70 million in 1 year, and that's spent in your community. And we see $125 million in total arts industry expenditures for FY18.
And one of the major reasons to hold an annual statewide gathering for people involved in arts and culture, artists, fundraisers, administrators, and others, is to create a possible snowball effect.
Even when it's a collection of people from very different disciplines, whether it's music or visual arts or literature, creators, building things. I have a rather expansive view of what our creative economy is. And I think when you get people like that together, resources are identified and ideas start forming. And it's never a bad thing when you get artists and people who are interested in the arts in the room together.
The ArtsLink Conference is scheduled for October 6th through the 8th at the Graduate Hotel in downtown Fayetteville. You can find out more at arkansasarts.org. www.swingforthecure.org.
The Komen Ozark 12th Annual Swing for the Cure Golf Classic is Friday, September 13th at Shadow Valley Country Club in Rogers. This 18-hole scramble tournament offers morning and afternoon flights, lunch, prizes, and more. Proceeds to benefit Susan G. Komen Ozark. More information available at KomenOzark.org or 750-PINK.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Unexpected is revealing the 2019 lineup for the fifth annual edition of the Fort Smith Festival. The final lineup was released earlier this morning. Muralists from Scotland, Mexico, England, and Spain will be creating works around the city from October 7th through October 12th. There will also be performance pieces and an immersive musical piece by Fort Smith native Amos Cochran, a piece that will be inspired by the effect memories can have on all of us. The festival officially launches October 5th with a block party conducted in partnership with the Future School in Fort Smith and a free concert from National Park Radio. More details and a full schedule can be found at unexpectedfs.com. The second season of Live at the Five and Dime continues tomorrow night at the Walmart Museum on the Bentonville Square. Tomorrow, the Block Street Hot Club Jazz Trio will play from 6 to 8. It's free. Also tomorrow night, the University of Arkansas Department of Music brings back the UA Jazz Jam Sessions. This fall, the sessions will be held in the Phoenix Gallery in downtown Fayetteville. These concerts are open to the public. You can be a listener or a player. The jam sessions are open to musicians of all levels and jazz fans of all kinds. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will play a pair of fall exhibition games later this fall. On Friday, September 20th, the Razorbacks will host Oklahoma. And on Saturday, October 12th, the team will travel to Stillwater for a game against Oklahoma State. The game at Baum Walker Stadium on the 20th is free and will last 14 innings, so even more baseball than usual for no cost. That game will offer light concessions, but you'll have to pay with cash. The University of Arkansas Police Department has operated a canine division for over 7 years, deployed at campus sports, public speaker events, and political events. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a new member of the canine unit is undergoing special training for community service.
Come on.
Canine Officer Riley Thoreau, carrying a bag of doggy treats, leads Charlie, a newly acquired silver lab pup, out of his canine patrol cruiser into the Tyson indoor track for some basic training. Charlie will one day serve as a canine explosives detection dog.
We'll get him to come here. When I say here, what he should do is recall to my left side, my non-gun side, which is where we like to handle him and have him in my left hand. There's a lot of distractions, so it's very important that Charlie knows when I'm trying to give him a command to look at me. So we'll say, look at me. He should look at me in the eyes, and then I can give him the next command to do.
Removing Charlie's leash, Thoreau motions and uses simple verbal commands.
Charlie, look at me. Sit. Down. Here.
Correct behavior is rewarded with both treats and effusive praise.
Yes, good boy. Good boy, Charlie. Good boy. Good boy. Good boy.
Thoreau says he was destined to be a canine officer.
From a young age, I always wanted to get in law enforcement, and I always thought it was the coolest thing to be able to see these dogs running around.
It's regulation for UA police dogs to retire at age 8, and this summer, 2 were replaced with pups, in this case Charlie, and Faye, a 4-month-old golden retriever who's being trained in French.
Couché? Couché? Bien. Bien, Faye.
Faye's handler, Officer Tara Wilder, says the pup will one day serve as an ambassador canine on campus and in the community.
You see a canine and their handler out, it's business, you know. You don't want to approach that dog or that handler, but she is going to be our community outreach canine.
Both Faye and Charlie daily embark on practice patrol duty on campus, which Wilder says elicits a lot of love from passersby.
I get the, aww, and then that's it. That's, you know, done from there.
UA canine handlers are with their dogs 24/7, says Officer Thoreau.
If we just go straight home, you know, he gets to chill out with me just like I'm chilling after shift.
UAPD employs a trained narcotics detection dog, 3 explosive detection dogs, including Charlie and Faye in her new role, says canine unit chief Sergeant Jeff Shetler, a certified canine trainer.
The explosive detection dogs, they'll work all the football games, basketball games. They work any event where we have a guest speaker come in that's of importance. You know, the Secret Service will call us and they need a sweep of the area done. They'll call in our bomb dogs for that. We're also members of an FBI task force. So pretty much anywhere in the state we're needed, we'll go.
The UAPD canine unit is provided chow and treats courtesy dog watch in Fayetteville, a doggy daycare, with veterinary care provided by Animal Medical Clinic. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Yes, good boy. Good boy, Charlie. Good boy.
And you can find a video of Charlie undergoing canine basic training on our story link to this segment. That can be found at ozarksatlarge.com. And, you know, there are other ways to hear Ozarks at Large if you aren't always able to join us during our over-the-air broadcasts. Our free podcast is available through subscription or download at services like Spotify, NPR One, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Apple TV. You can also find past shows and individual stories and individual interviews at ozarksatlarge.com. And you can find other station news, features, and podcasts at KUAF.com. Tomorrow on Ozarks, a Wednesday, as more medical cannabis dispensaries open across the state, medical experts say patients remain ill-advised about dosing and impairment risks.
You can go on the internet and you can get anecdotal recommendations, but in terms of a evidence-based source, that source does not exist.
Details in tomorrow's story on Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. This is a Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large. Anthropologists who study prehistoric human teeth are unearthing certain links to present-day oral health. Daniel Carruth files this story for Arkansas Public Media.
Right.
Dr. Peter Unger pulls out bags of tooth impressions and shuffles through them. He is standing in a storeroom crammed with boxes filled with jawbones, skulls, and dental molds. This is the Unger Lab at the University of Arkansas, devoted to the study of prehistoric mammal and human teeth development.
Here, for example, is the lower jaw of a species called Paranthropus that lived about 2 million years ago.
Unger, an anthropologist, says these fossils, which reveal environments in which human teeth evolved, inform modern human medical science.
If we understand sort of what we're designed to eat and how that has impacted our oral health, we can see how those changes in diet that have occurred over time are impacting our oral health today and be able to use that to inform clinical practice moving forward.
And he says everything from jaw size to tooth crowding is a result of human evolution.
Our teeth respond to the foods that we eat. If you look at our evolution, we've learned that our jaws used to be much larger, and our jaws were larger, it turns out, because we were spending a lot more time eating hard, brittle, tough foods that stimulate jaw growth.
A recent focus of his work has been with the Hadza people of Tanzania, some of the last remaining hunter-gatherers. And that's because modern research on tooth decay is linked to a widespread shift to agriculture.
If you look at the bioarchaeological record, before the origins of agriculture, there are very few cavities in the mouth. The teeth are beautiful.
And that's because traditional meat and plant-based diets were mostly devoid of carbohydrates like corn, which break down into sugar in the mouth and form acidic bacteria that can lead to cavities. But Unger's research reveals gaps in that well-established theory.
I found a really high rate of cavities in the Hadza men.
And he says that's because early research doesn't factor for all environments and foods that early humans accessed.
When you look in the tropics, you see that at least men will often consume honey. The honey will get trapped between wax residue on the teeth, and they don't brush their teeth, and the tooth itself. And that causes high rates of cavities.
And I just keep scanning.
Undergraduate student Dylan Elkington Stoss sits at a computer and fidgets with a human tooth under a microscope in the Unger lab. A scratchy gray image pops up on the screen, resembling more of a topographic map of the moon than a tooth. Stoss says the tiny indentations reveal dietary patterns. He's researching tooth enamel erosion.
Right now, it's really pricey to diagnose it, and partial destruction to the tooth also happens. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to find a way to do it without being so invasive.
His research, funded by the National Institutes of Health, may lead to the development of a non-invasive handheld device that can monitor and treat erosive tooth wear, mostly caused by sugary drinks, according to the American Dental Association. Unger says the goal of the lab is to help people understand that there's more to oral health than just brushing and flossing. It's about the relationship between humans and their environment.
Diet is a key to everything that we do. And if we're going to understand evolution as a result of environmental change, which it seems to be, we have to know something about diet. The best way to get at diet is through teeth.
For Arkansas Public Media in Fayetteville, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Support for this series on oral health in Arkansas comes from the Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation, working to increase access to dental care in the state and improve the oral health of all Arkansans.
The COCO-C chapter of the Arkansas Archaeological Society will meet tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Washington County Cooperative Extension Office. Guest speaker will be George Sabo. He'll present Disasters and Archaeology. The horrific events that took place on this day in 2001 brought forth a wide range of emergency responses. It is free and open to the public. For more, Arkansas Archaeology Society on Facebook. Arkansas Public Theater will present The Rocky Horror Show by Richard O'Brien later this month. The midnight movie your parents didn't want you to see comes to life on stage in a campy musical. The production contains adult language and content, and it's recommended for mature audiences. Now you know. For more, ArkansasPublicTheater.org. And the Museum of Native American History will present Native Conversations, an introduction to the Cherokee language. This takes place September 14th at 5:30 p.m. The event will be led by Travis Wolf, a certified Cherokee language expert, and it will teach participants the history and foundations of the Cherokee language. If you'd like to know more, you can go online to mona.us. That's MONAH.US. Contributors for this Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzana Sitek, and Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show from the Harold and Blanche Cox News Studio. The Community Spotlight is produced at KUAF by Pete Hartman. Yes, Daniel Carruth, the reporter behind the dental archaeology story we just heard, is also the voice you wake up to every Monday through Friday morning as the local anchor for Morning Edition on KUAF. Our conversations between Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, and John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, come to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Additional content today came from our colleagues at KUAR Public Radio in Little Rock and Central Arkansas. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Frog Valley in Crawford County. That's not to be confused with Bullfrog Valley in Pope County, home to an infamous counterfeiting ring in the late 19th century. You can learn more about Bullfrog Valley Gang at the Encyclopedia of Arkansas.net. Oh, we're not going to be in Bullfrog Valley or Frog Valley soon, but KUAF will be making a road trip to Eureka Springs in a couple of days. The September edition of Cocktails for a Cause, presented by Main Street Eureka Springs, will be at Rogue's Manor Thursday from 5 to 7, and it will benefit KUAF. We're planning some great fun. Many KUAF voices will be on hand to talk with you as well. You can learn more by going to the Main Street Eureka Springs or Downtown Eureka Springs Facebook pages. Antoinette Grajeda finds music for us to play at the end of many of our midweek shows, and she has selected a Candy Lee performance from a few years ago that was recorded just for us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. It's a song called Time. Candy will be at Ozark Folkways Saturday night beginning at 6:30. Admission to the show free. There is a suggested donation of $10 that goes to the musicians and to further the Ozark Folkways mission. More information at ozarkfolkways.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Kyle Kellums. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7.
Well, I know. We've all got to grow up someday. But I'm not in a hurry. I don't want to lose my sense of wonder. I don't want to lose my joy. I want to hang. with the world that I have not yet explored. Spend you wisely enough.